You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en foco.
América Latina en foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
This is Karin Dissis of ASCOA Online. Elections in Latin America are running full speed, as we've discussed in previous episodes. Today, we're going to talk about Colombia, which is experiencing a new era for democracy in the first election cycle since a historic peace deal with the FARC. Colombians voted for legislators on March 11th, elections that will have big implications for the next presidential vote, which is taking place in May of this year. My colleague, Holly Sunderland, spoke with ASCOA Senior Director of Media Relations, Adriana Larrota, who has a long career covering the country's democratic processes.
We cannot confuse the noise of bullets with the sound of democracy and a contentious election where there is drama is good. In spite of everything that has happened in Colombia, there is a really long lineup of candidates, very well prepared, willing.
During their conversation, you will also hear from Alvaro Forero Tascon, a legal expert and columnist at El Espectador, who led a conference call with Council of the Americas members after the vote. We'll hear how the primaries defined the race's frontrunners out of more than 10 pre-candidates for the presidency this year. We'll also learn about the makeup of the new Congress and what has changed in Colombian elections since the country's peace agreement with the FARC.
Hi, Holly. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here with me.
Thank you for having me.
So, but before we get to the presidential race, I wanted to go over some highlights of the congressional elections. So first off, some basics on these elections. Colombians voted for 102 senators and 166 representatives to four-year terms. The representatives are elected locally by department, but the senators are elected on a national basis.
That is correct, and it's an incredibly complex process. You actually, when you get to the polling station, you get a booklet where for 15 or 20 parties, you see a list of at least 100 candidates for Senate. And it's a little less complex for the House of Representatives, but it's still an exercise that, in my opinion, needs to be improved, because I'm surprised that people actually get to know who to vote for, given the complexity of the process.
I'm just trying to imagine going to a ballot box in New York and casting a ballot for a senator from Texas, but it has to be something similar.
Correct. For the House of Representatives, you vote locally, and for, in my case, a Colombian living abroad, you vote for a representative that represents Colombians living abroad, but you have only one representative for the 5 million Colombians who live abroad, so that's not very representative.
Yeah, wouldn't that be about a little more than 10% of the entire population is represented by one member of Congress?
That is correct.
That's incredible.
Yes, in the lead up to the elections, publicity increases, and I think the candidates try to help people to understand how to vote, but it's still a very complex process.
Mm-hmm. And so in addition to voting for legislators, Colombians on Sunday were able to cast votes in two open primaries of sorts for presidential candidates. There was one ballot with three right-wing candidates and a second with two left-wing ones. And the aim of these was to help bring clarity to what has been a pretty crowded presidential field. To get more detail on the results of these primaries, we're going to hear from Alvaro Forero Tascon, who is a legal expert and columnist at El Espectador.
Basically, what was so interesting of the primaries was that they were about the left and the right, in which the front runners and the polls were competing. On the right, Iván Duque, which is the heir to President Álvaro Uribe, and on the left, Gustavo Petro, which is the former mayor of Bogotá. As I said, they're the front runners in the polls, so there was a big dispute who had a bigger force. The results are that Mr. Duque won fairly easily with 4 million votes of the 6 million total. Marta Lucia Ramirez, the former commerce minister, was second with 1.5 million votes. And Mr. Ordóñez, a far-right judge, had 383,000 votes. So in total, it had 6 million votes, the primary on the right. The primary on the left had 3.5 million, which is fairly less. But Mr. Petro won 2.8 million of those votes against Carlos Caicedo, a former mayor of a small city in Colombia, who won 500,000 votes. So the difference between Mr. Duque and Mr. Petro is around 1,200,000 votes, which is not that much. The big question is if these votes are going to appear again in the first round of the presidential election. There's not an easy answer because in the past, candidates who have had large votes in the primaries did not win and did not get in the election, the presidential election, the same number of votes. They got less votes in the presidential election than in the primaries. That has many reasons, especially that in Colombian system, anyone can vote in one of the primaries. Even if you're not part of that party, you can vote. So there's a lot of other parties voting according to their interest, in favor or against a candidate. On the other hand, it's not easy for a candidate to put all the votes his party won in Congress in the presidential elections.
So, Adriana, what was your take in seeing the results of these primaries and how can we understand them?
So, historically, the primaries weren't really big in Colombia because in Colombia there used to be two big parties and the parties didn't hold primaries. They normally hold conventions, and those conventions were more like a crowning exercise for candidates that people knew very much in advance were going to be the candidates. But since there is more diversity in Colombian political life, now you have several movements and parties, it has become a really crowded field. But I would also say that something that not many people is aware of is that there are a huge number of candidates in Colombia, good candidates, that for a country that has been, that was at war for 50 years and really faced the threats that Colombia faced, to have 10, 15 candidates, all of them very well qualified to be willing to run for office, it's a very positive sign. So I would say primaries are a sign of the vitality of the Colombian democracy, where candidates are chosen by the people and not necessarily in conventions, and also in the tradition of Colombia being trying to be a very democratic country where everything is decided by the people to evolve.
So how is the presidential race doing? And there's one big conclusion. Mr. Duque, who had been lagging in the polls for many months, is now the front runner, a clear, very clear front runner in the race, the man to beat. And the big question is if Mr. Petro is the second one who could get into the second round of the elections. So as you know, in May, there's the first round of presidential elections. Most analysts believe there won't be a winner with more than 50% of the vote. So there will be a second round in June. And there is when the question becomes more complicated. Because basically, the other two contenders, which are Mr. Germán Vargas Lleras, the former vice president of President Santos, and who is a center-right candidate, and Mr. Sergio Fajardo, who is the former mayor of Medellin, who is a center-left candidate, both had very good results in the congressional elections. Mr. Vargas' party almost doubled in size, became the second largest after the Mr. Uribe's party, and so that makes him a very strong support from Congress. And Mr. Fajardo, who was supposed to be the one who did not have any congressional support, did very well. The two parties that support him combined would equal Mr. Vargas' support.
So, Adriana, who else would you add to that pack?
Yeah, the person missing in Alvaro's list is Humberto de la Calle, who is the candidate for the Liberal Party, that is one of the two traditional parties in Colombia. But Humberto de la Calle is much more than that. De la Calle was the chief negotiator of the peace agreement with FARC, and his platform has been defending the agreement and making sure that the agreement gets not just respected, but implemented. After these elections, there have been talks of De La Calle joining the coalition Colombia, led by Sergio Fajardo, something that many people would approve because, as we said, both the right and the left are growing stronger in Colombia, and moderates need to gather together if they really want to have a chance of going to the second round of the elections in June. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next weeks we see a movement of that fifth candidate, Humberto de la Calle, moving towards the coalition Colombia camp.
And now we're going to hear Alvaro talk about what the new congressional makeup will mean for whoever Colombia's next president is.
The other issue is, what does the congressional results imply? There were no big changes. Basically, the big parties kept more or less the same amount of senators and representatives. Mr. Uribe's party, the Centro Democrático, became the biggest, the largest party in Congress, but did not get any new senators. It keeps the 19 senators it had. In terms of composition, the question is if the majority would be to the left or to the right. And the answer would be this. There's a very clear right-wing majority for economic issues. Both Mr. Uribe's party, the Conservative Party, the Liberal Party, Mr. Vargas' party, and the President's party, Partido de la U, are clearly right-wing and on economic issues. Those parties would have around 70-something percent of the Senate and the House of Representatives. So there's a very clear right-wing majority. But on issues like the peace process, things changed, and the opposition to the peace process, which is basically from the right, does not have a majority, because the President Santos' party, the Liberal Party, and the small parties, which are all to the left, would form a majority in order to protect the peace process. The other question is, would there be a majority for the next president? Well, that depends who is the president, of course. The tradition is that Colombian parties vote in terms of what is useful in political participation. The major parties are not very ideological, but tend to reach agreements with governments in terms of political participation. The very ideological parties like Mr. Uribe's party and the ones on the left will not be a majority. So if the president is from the right, he would have a very clear majority, especially for economic issues. On the issues of the peace process, he would not have a majority. And if the president is from the center or the center left, he would have to arrange a new coalition, which would not be so easy, because the parties on the right, which have a more ideological leaning, it could be a problem for him. If the president is Fajardo, he would have a difficult situation finding a coalition because he does not agree with giving political participation to some parties, but he has governed with no problem in the Medellin and the state of Antioquia in the past, so that could happen. If the president would be Petro, which I do not think that is very possible, he would have a very small support in Congress, mainly 20, around 20 senators of 108. But of course, that would be a big disruption of political tradition in Colombia that at the moment I do not see as very possible.
Okay, so let's talk about who will be in Congress. Thanks to a new rule passed in 2015, for the first time there will be two additional members of Congress. Whoever is the runner-up in the presidential race will receive an automatic seat in the Senate, and his or her running mate will receive an automatic seat in the House. How did this rule come about?
So that's a rule that was approved in 2015 as part of an entire overhaul of the democratic system. Colombia has a tradition of being a very democratic country. I would say for the past 20 or 30 years, the country has been implementing measures that make really the system more democratic and more participative. And that was part of that idea. So the runner-up will go to the Senate, the running mate of the runner-up will go to the House of Representatives. And then the idea is that they will have a platform where to continue to promote their ideas and their thesis. I would imagine it's like having Hillary Clinton in the Senate defending her ideas. It sounds really democratic, but it sounds a little messy and difficult to manage. But in reality, Colombians already have seen what's the result of that. The head of the opposition, the two-term former president, Álvaro Uribe, is a senator. He, by the way, will be a senator again because he won in Sunday's elections. And so he really has a big pulpit from where to defend his ideas and make the life of the government a little more difficult. Whoever is the runner-up, that person will, and his running mate, will have a big presence in the next government.
So, and then finally, there will be an additional 5 senators and 5 representatives in the next Congress, actually the next 2 Congresses through 2026. These representatives will not be voted on by the people, but are automatic seats given to the FARC, who have converted in the last couple of years from an illegal armed group into a legal political party as part of the peace agreement with the government of President Juan Manuel Santos. So why don't you give us a bit of backstory about the debate about these seats, where public opinion was about the fact that FARC would be fielding candidates, and then what happened on Election Day?
That was a very contentious point during the negotiations of the peace agreement, because many people in Colombia didn't believe that FARC deserved to have assigned seats without having to run for them. On the other hand, people that were for the agreement thought that they would never win seats if not for that initial advantage, and they will have that advantage only for 2 elections, the one that just passed and the next one. After that, they will have to run like any other party. Of course, minority parties in Colombia also complain because they have to play by the other rules, which is difficult, but the result of the agreement is that FARC demobilized, knowing that had those seats. What made the issue really difficult was that the peace agreement was approved very late in the government, in the current government term. So when these elections came around, the FARC leaders have not gone still through the transitional justice that will have to make them confess their crimes and be possibly sentenced to those or be absolved. But that hasn't happened. So it is repellent to many people and really goes against what they believe to have to see FARC legislate from Congress while they haven't been through the justice, the transitional justice system. But that's the reality of what it is. And the transitional justice will probably move fast enough that people won't see that discrepancy for much long.
And there's the possibility that some of the Congresspeople FARC sends will later could be convicted of crimes and have to leave Congress. Is that right?
Yes, that is a possibility, but that's a rule that has been agreed upon, so everybody knows that that is the case. Mm-hmm. And for all this attention that FARC got, thinking that they were really going to dominate the Congress, they actually got less than 1% of the votes. So the probably the expectation is that in 2026, when they will have to run like any other party, they won't do as good as the enemies of the peace agreement thought they were going to do.
And so then if you, though, are a voter and say the peace process is your top concern, you might be for or against it, how might you choose the candidates?
Most of the candidates are supporting the peace agreement in the way it was signed, with the exception of the Democratic Center. And there are, but it's not very clear which part of the agreement would be changed. And the current candidate, Iván Duque, who was nominated on Sunday, hasn't been very specific on which parts he would change. But that's one of the promises they have done. Otherwise, the other candidates are pretty much defending the agreement. And Vargas Lleras, he was part of the government until recently, but he has somehow hinted at some aspects of the agreement he would like to review.
Well, he got in a little bit of trouble while serving as Santos's vice president for equivocating a bit on his support of the agreement, right?
He had to support the agreement, but because that was the main policy of the government, but it was clear that he wasn't necessarily approving all the measures that were approved. So we can expect that he would review in agreement with the Congress, because no president will be able to change the agreement without Congress participation.
Yes, and there have been some court rulings that have enshrined the peace agreement, saying the next presidents, whoever it would be, would not be able to alter it, which makes a position like Duque's a little not very obvious in that he wants to, there are a lot of people who are upset with the agreement, and he wants to respond to those by saying he wants to change it, but then also he's limited legally as to what he can do.
To some extent. But the legislation that makes the agreement real and allows to implement it hasn't been written or approved. So everything that has been legislated upon so far and that has been approved, reviewed by the courts, cannot be changed. But moving forward, there are aspects that can be changed.
I see. And then on the other hand, if you are very much in support of the peace agreement, who are going to be your top candidates?
Most of the candidates are in support of the peace agreement the way it was signed. Obviously, Humberto de la Calle, who was the actual designer of the agreement, Sergio Fajardo and his running mate, Claudia López, Vargas Lleras to some extent, although we may preview that he is going to revise part of the agreement. That's not very clear because he thread a very difficult line being part of the government. The only party that we can expect will review and maybe change the parts of the agreement is the Democratic Center.
And then also Gustavo Petro, as a former guerrilla himself at the M19, not the FARC, but he's also been very pro in support of the peace process.
And he has been trying to attract the Coalition Colombia to his camp and to create a big pro-peace agreement front. Because that's probably the only element that the left and the moderates have in common.
Talking about these top voter issues, so just to give people kind of a sort of crib notes, if you are a Colombian voter and your top issue is corruption, who are some of the main candidates and tickets that you are considering?
In this day and age, no one can be against anti-corruption efforts. But if you want to identify for which parties that's the top issue, I would say the Coalition Colombia, led by Sergio Fajardo, that has been a flag that they have really defended in Congress.
Especially with his running mate, Senator Claudia López, correct?
Correct, who is really the most vocal person in Congress against corruption. And Gustavo Petro is also a big anti-corruption defender. He actually named his list to Congress the decent ones. So people, when people went to the voting stations, they would mark the decent ones if they wanted to vote for his candidates.
And so then lastly, I mean, traditionally people like to say that the economy in the end is voters' underlying concern. If you're a Colombian voter and the economy is your top issue, how do you approach the presidential field?
There are not substantial differences between all the candidates except for Gustavo Petro, who is probably someone who will implement a government where the state will have a bigger presence. But for all the other candidates, I would say that they have very much in common. They are pro-trade, pro-integration, fiscally conservative, and very much in the line of the previous governments. So they are the only candidate that's kind of out of that description is Gustavo Petro, and it remains to be seen what are his actual policies.
Okay, and so finally, Adriana, I wanted to ask you, you were a journalist with El Espectador in the 1980s, and then you moved to broadcast news, where you anchored Colombia's top evening news program, QAP Noticias, in the early 90s. What was it like to cover an election in Colombia in that time?
It was really like being in a war zone. The perception was that not just the politicians that were targets, but journalists were targets too. I remember a particular election, that of 1990, when at least three of the candidates were actually killed. But all throughout Colombian life, there have been political violence, and that was very much present on election day. And when the FARC were active, election day was a very difficult day for many. So FARC used to invade entire towns just for the purpose of sending a message to the population in that area and in other areas in the country. People in many towns were compelled either to vote for the candidate that FARC favored or not vote at all. So in Colombia, on election day, you would count votes, and very often you would count victims too. That wasn't the case this past Sunday. It was a very peaceful election from that point of view. I was reading a headline in an Australian newspaper that I thought it was funny and thoughtful, and they said that there was less violence and more drama. And I thought drama is good for democracy. Democracy means drama, and certainly there was less violence. That's not to say that there is not violence in the political process. Over the past 2 years, there have been over 200 political assassinations of social leaders in towns.
Especially indigenous and Afro-descendant leaders in rural areas formerly held by the FARC, right?
Exactly, and there are many people calling the attention to that, because the success of the FARC integration is depends on the state to be able to ensure their security. So that's something people are really calling the attention to, and it's important. But I'd say general phenomenon, as if you look at the entire election day picture in Colombia, it is unprecedented, and people should be celebrating that more than they are. And I feel that all the noise that you hear in social media and the attacks from one party to the other, I would say that's the sound of democracy. We cannot confuse the noise of bullets with the sound of democracy and a contentious election where there is drama is good. In spite of everything that has happened in Colombia, there is a really long lineup of candidates, very well prepared, willing people that want to play by the rules and put their names out there and be the next president of Colombia. That's really good news.
And speaking of playing by the rules, so Colombia's the first round presidential vote will be May 27th, and then the top two vote-getters will face each other in a runoff on June 17th, which happens to fall at the very beginning of the 2018 World Cup in which Colombia is playing. So the World Cup will start on June 14th, the runoff is June 17th, and then Colombia has its first game later, 2 days later on that Tuesday. So do you think there's any chance? I know the right especially has been campaigning on a message of things are bad, this is negative. Do you think if Colombians are feeling particularly optimistic and in good spirits, given the World Cup, do you think there's any chance this could dilute the right's message?
Yeah, well, that will depend on how the Colombian team does in the preparatory games. So if we have a strong selection, I imagine people will feel positive. But I think that it can be also negative for the voter turnout. That is always a big issue. In Colombia, abstention is huge. And I can imagine the Sunday before the first Colombia game. Also, don't forget that that Sunday there will be games. So the elections will have to compete with really great matches on TV. So people will maybe optimistic or more optimistic than the usual, but the challenge will be to get them out of their homes and go and vote.
They're going to really need to do a PR campaign with James Rodriguez and his teammates casting ballots from Russia.
Exactly. That is correct. And it remains to be seen. If anything, I would say that the elections have big competition.
Yes. So obviously a lot more to be seen. But thank you so much for your time and your insights, Adriana. So we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Holly.
Thank you for listening to Latin America in Focus. I'm your host, Karin Zissas. This podcast was produced by Luisa Lemmy. For more on the year and regional elections, visit as-coa.org/2018. The music in this podcast was recorded at America Society in New York City. Visit musicoftheamericas.org to find out about upcoming concerts. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you did, please write us a review and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. Thank you very much.